Wake up, America, wake up. And I'm not talking about rubbing your sleep out your eyes. I'm talking about knowing what your constitutional rights are and all of the wonderful people that sacrificed so that you could have those rights. First, I don't know if you've seen on the news or on TikTok or on Instagram or wherever you follow social media, all the protests that are going on in America, which is great. They are allowed to protest over the Israeli and Palestinian war. However, they are totally not taking into consideration the First Amendment when they do the dumb shit that they're doing by saying that they're going to, you know, kill Americans, threatening to overthrow the government of the United States in the name of Islam. These things are not protected under the First Amendment. Defacing national monuments, vandalizing businesses. And it disgusts me to hear Americans say, well, that's their constitutional right. Wrong. You know why you think this? Because you don't know what your constitutional rights are. So I'm going to start this out by explaining what the First Amendment is and exactly what it covers. Now, here's what the First Amendment reads. Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof or abridge the freedom of speech or of the press or the right of the people peaceably to assemble and to petition the government for a redress of grievances. That's the First Amendment. Now here's some clarification on the First Amendment and what it covers. The five freedoms it protects, speech, religion, press, assembly, and the right to petition the government, together, these five guaranteed freedoms make the people of the United States of America the freest in the world. Number two, before agreeing to accept the Constitution, the founders of our Democratic Republic demanded that these freedoms be protected by an amendment to the original document, the First Amendment. Third, there's no legal age you have to reach to exercise your First Amendment freedoms. They are guaranteed to you the day you are born. There's also no citizenship requirement for the First Amendment protection. If you're in the U.S., you have the freedom of speech, religion, press, and assembly and petition. Fourth, the First Amendment is neither left-wing or right-wing. It can be used to push for social and political change or to oppose change. The First Amendment is for everyone. Fifth, the First Amendment protects us against government limits on our freedom of expression, but it doesn't prevent a private employer from setting its own rules. Sixth, the First Amendment prevents governments from requiring you to say something you don't want to, or keeping you from hearing or reading the words of another. Even if you never speak out yourself, you have the right to receive information. And seventh, students have the right to pray in America's public schools, as long as there's no disruption to school operations and no government employees, teachers, coaches are involved. Okay, now listen up, because this is very important. This is the stuff I'm talking about. This is what everybody thinks they have the right to, but they don't. These are the categories of speech that are given lesser or no protection by the First Amendment, and therefore may be restricted, which includes obscenity, fraud, child pornography, speech integral to illegal conduct, speech that incites imminent lawless action, speech that violates intellectual property of law, true threats, and false accusations. So all this, we are Hamas, you kill America, none of that's protected under the First Amendment. So these people are clearly breaking the law and should be arrested. So the things these protesters are saying and doing clearly are not covered by the First Amendment. So I'm just throwing it out there. Peaceful protest. None of the crap that's going on right now. Now, if you're curious as to who wrote the Bill of Rights, that would be James Madison. Madison introduced his proposed amendments to the Constitution on June 8, 1789, which would eventually become known as the Bill of Rights. Now, Madison derived the Bill of Rights from the Magna Carta of 1215, the English Bill of Rights of 1689, the colonial struggle against King and Parliament, and a gradual broadening concept of equality among the American peoples. Now, if you don't know who James Madison is, shame on you. So let me tell you who he is. James Madison was an American statesman, a diplomat, a founding father who served as the fourth president of the United States from 1809 to 1817. Madison is hailed as the father of the Constitution for his pivotal role in drafting and promoting the Constitution of the United States and the Bill of Rights. So yeah, in a nutshell, he's that dude. All the liberties and freedoms you have today are basically because of this man. So if you didn't know that, so I was recently on TikTok and I'm scrolling through and I see this girl in America and she's crying and she's saying how, like, what's going on in Palestine and Israel is awful, which I do agree with. But then she's like, I'm ashamed to be an American. And my mind flipped and I'm like, what are you talking about? First off, you're able to come on TikTok and say these things because you're an American. Have you been in Palestine or under Hamas rules, you could never say any of the things you just said. You couldn't have an education. You can't even travel without their permission. So know what you're talking about. I mean, yes, the war is awful, but I don't want to be an American. Where else are you going to go to have the freedoms that you have here? Second, I would just like to say that on 9/11, I was there. I wasn't at the New York, but I was there watching television. And I remember everything that happened and how terrifying it was and the loss of American lives. And I also remember them showing Palestinians partying in the streets, throwing out candy, dancing. So I personally feel what's going on over there is awful, but I'm also not going to go, oh, I need to support these people because they didn't support us. And they thought it was a big joke when we were getting bombed. Well, you know, I'm sorry. I'm sorry for human life being lost. But you know what? Who's laughing now? I mean, you're getting destroyed because you let Hamas attack Israel. And you can't say they didn't because they did. You know, and I'm listening to these people protesting, saying, you know, the Americans gave billions of dollars to Israel. Last time I checked, I didn't have billions of dollars. Last time I checked, I was working two jobs and trying to support my family. So I didn't give no one nothing. That is the government, that is the president, and he doesn't check with me to do stuff. I'm just saying. So talking about damaging the properties of Americans, you know, hurting Americans, you know, that makes no sense to me because you're crying, and rightfully so, that the deaths of innocents is happening over in Palestine and in Israel. But then you're talking about doing something here in America to innocent people who don't have anything to say about what the governments do. So I've always thought that was funny. I mean, I'm like, not funny, haha, but like, you know, you're going to make innocent people pay for something that's out of our control. Now, honestly, if you're that bent out of shape about what's going on in Palestine, get some travel visas, travel across countries, and go there and help fight. That's what the Ukrainian people did when Russia invaded. They started sending them medical supplies. They started sending aid. People went over there to fight. I mean, if you really feel that strongly about it, do something about it. So when the American colonists were faced with oppression, they did not hold back their feelings. I don't know if you know who Thomas Paine is, but again, you should know who this person is. And if you don't, shame on you. So Thomas Paine was an English-born American founding father, political activist, philosopher, political theorist, and revolutionary. Now in 1776, Thomas Paine published Common Sense, which is a major influence in the American Revolution. It's one of the writings that influenced the American colonists to rise up and seek freedom from oppression. So I'm going to read you the first chapter. Some writers have so confounded society with government as to leave little or no distinction between them, whereas they are not only different, but have different origins. Society is produced by your wants and government by our wickedness. The former promotes our happiness positively by uniting our afflictions, the latter negatively by restraining our vices. The one encourages intercourse, the other creates distinctions. The first is a patron, the last a punisher. Society in every state is a blessing, but government, even its best state, is but a necessary evil. In its worst state, an intolerable one, for when we suffer or are exposed to the same miseries by a government, which we might expect in a country without government, our calamity is heightened by reflecting that we furnish the means by which we suffer. Government, like dress, is the badge of lost innocence. The palaces of kings are built on the ruins of the bowers of paradise. For the impulses of conscience clear, uniform and irresistible obeyed, man would need no other lawgiver. But that not being the case, he finds it necessary to surrender up a part of his property to furnish means for the protection of the rest. And this he is induced to do by the same prudence which in every case advises him out of the two evils to choose the least. Wherefore, security being the true design and end of government, it unanswerably follows that whoever form thereof appears most likely to ensure it to us, with the least expense and greatest benefits, it preferable to all others. In order to gain a clear and just idea of the design and end of government, let us suppose a small number of persons settled in some sequestered part of the earth. Unconnected with the rest, they will then represent the first peopling of any country or of the world. In this state of natural liberty, society will be their first thought. A thousand motives will excite them thereto. The strength of one man is so unequal to his wants, and his mind so unfitted for perpetual solitude, that he is soon obliged to seek assistance and relief of another, who in his turn requires the same. Four or five united would be able to raise a tolerable dwelling in the midst of a wilderness. But one man might labor out the common period of life without accomplishing anything. When he had felled his timber, he could not remove it, nor erect it after it was removed. Hunger, in the meantime, would urge him from his work, and every different want call him a different way. Disease, nay, even misfortune, would be death. For though neither might be moral, it either would disable him from living, and reduce him to a state in which he might rather be said to perish than to die. Thus necessity, like a gravitating power, would soon form our newly arrived emigrants into society, the reciprocal blessings of which would supersede and render the obligations of law and government unnecessary. While they remain perfectly just to each other, but as nothing but heaven is impregnable to vice, it will unavoidably happen that in proportion, as they surmount the first difficulties of immigration, which bound them together in a common cause, they will begin to relax in their duty and attachment to each other. And this reminisce will point out the necessity of establishing some form of government to supply the defect of moral virtue. Some convenient tree will afford them a state house, under the branches of which the whole colony may assemble to deliberate on public matters. It is more than probable that their first laws will have the title only of regulations, and be enforced by no other penalty than public disesteem. In this first parliament, every man, by natural right, will have a seat. But as the colony increases, the public concerns will increase likewise, and the distance at which the members may be separated will render it too inconvenient for all of them to meet on every occasion as at the first. When their number was small, their habitations near, and the public concerns few and trifling. This will point out the convenience of their consenting to leave the legislative part to be managed by a select number chosen from the whole body, who are supposed to have the same concerns at stake which those have who appointed them, and who will act in the same manner as the whole body would act were they present. If the colony continue increasing, it will become necessary to augment the number of representatives, and that the interest of every part of the colony may be attended to. It will be found best to divide the whole into convenient parts, each part sending its proper number, and that the elected might never form to themselves an interest separate from their electors. Prudence will point out the propriety of having elections often, because as the elected might by that means return and mix again with the general body of the electors, in a few months their fidelity to the public will be secured by the prudent reflection of not making a rod for themselves, and as their frequent interchange will establish a common interest with every part of the community, they will mutually and naturally support each other, and on this, not on the unmeaning name of a king, depends the strength of government and the happiness of the governed. Here, then, is the origin and rise of the government, namely, a mode rendered necessary by the inability of moral virtue to govern by the world. Here, too, is the design and end of government, viz., freedom and security, and however our eyes may be dazzled with snow, our ears deceived by sound, however prejudice may warp our wills, our interests darken our understanding, the simple voice of nature and of reason will say, it is right. I draw my idea of the form of government from a principle in nature, which no art can overturn, viz., that the more simple anything is, the less liable it is to be disordered, and the easier repaired when disordered. And with this maxim in view, I offer a few remarks on the much-so-boasted Constitution of England. That it was noble for the dark and slavish times in which it was erected is granted. When the world was overrun with tyranny, the least removed therefrom was a glorious rescue. But that it is imperfect, subject to conversations, and incapable of producing what it seems to promise, is easily demonstrated. Absolute governments, though the disgrace of human nature, have this advantage with them, that they are simple. If the people suffer, they know the head from which their suffering springs, know likewise the remedy, and are not bewildered by a variety of causes and curses. But the Constitution of England is so exceedingly complex that the nation may suffer for years together without being able to discover in which part the fault lies. Some will say in one, and some will say in another, and every political physician will advise a different medicine. I know it is difficult to get over local or long-standing prejudices. Yet if we will suffer otherwise to examine the component parts of the English Constitution, we shall find them to be the base remains of two ancient tyrannies, compounded with some new republican materials. First, the remainder of monarchical tyranny in the person of the king. Secondly, the remainder of aristocratical tyranny in the person of the peers. Thirdly, the new republican materials in the persons of the commons, on whose virtue depends the freedom of England. The two first, by being hereditary, are independent of the people. Wherefore, in a constitutional sense, they contribute nothing towards the freedom of the state. To say that the Constitution of England is a union of three powers, reciprocally checking each other, is farcical. Either the words have no meaning, or they are a flat contradiction. To say that the Commons is a check upon the King, presupposes two things. First, that the king is not to be trusted without being looked after. Or in other words, that a thirst for absolute power is the natural disease of monarchy. Secondly, that the commons, by being appointed for that purpose, are either wiser or more worthy of the confidence than the crown. But as the same constitution, which gives the commons a power to check the king by withholding the supplies, gives afterwards the king the power to check the commons by empowering him to reject their other bills, it again supposes that the king is wiser than those whom it is already supposed to be wiser than him, a mere absurdity. There is something exceedingly ridiculous in the composition of monarchy. It first excludes a man from the means of information, yet empowers him to act in the case where the highest judgment is required. The state of the king shuts him from the world, yet the business of a king requires him to know it thoroughly, wherefore the different parts, unnaturally opposing and destroying each other, prove the whole character to be absurd and useless. Some writers have explained that the English constitution thus, the king, say they, is one, the people another, the peers are a house in behalf of the king, the commons is behalf of the people, but this has all the distinctions of a house divided against itself. And though the expressions be pleasantly arranged, yet when examined they appear idle and ambiguous. And it will always happen that the nicest constructions that words are capable of, when applied to the description of something which either cannot exist or is too incomprehensible to be within the compass of description, will be words of sound only, and though they may amuse the ear, they cannot inform the mind, for this explanation includes a previous question, viz., how came the king by power which the people are afraid to trust and always obliged to check? Such a power could not be the gift of a wise people. Neither can any power which needs checking be from God. Yet the provision which the Constitution makes supposes such a power exists. But the provision is unequal to the task. The means either cannot or will not accomplish the end, and the whole affair is a filo de se. For as the greater weight will always carry up the less, and as all the wheels of a machine are put in motion by one, it only remains to know which power in the Constitution has the most weight, for that will govern. And though the others, or a part of them, may clog, or as the phrase is, check the rapidity of its motion, yet so long as they cannot stop it, their endeavor will be ineffectual. The first moving power will at last have its way, and what it wants in speed is supplied by time. That the crown is this overbearing part in the English Constitution needs not be mentioned, and that it derives its whole consequence merely from being the giver of places is self-evident. Wherefore, though we have been wise enough to shut and lock a door against absolute monarchy, we at the same time have been foolish enough to put the crown in possession of the key. The prejudice of Englishmen in favor of their own government by king, lords, and commons arises as much or more from national pride than reason. Individuals are undoubtedly safer in England than in some other countries, but the will of the king is as much the law of the land in Britain as in France, with this difference that instead of proceeding directly from his mouth, it is handed to the people under the most formal shape of an act of parliament, for the fate of Charles I hath only made kings more supple, not more just. Wherefore, laying aside all national pride and prejudice in favor of modes and forms, the plain truth is that this is wholly owing to the constitution of the people, and not the constitution of the government, that the crown is not as oppressive in England as in Turkey. An inquiry into the constitutional errors in the English form of government is at this time highly necessary, for as we are never in a proper condition of doing justice to others while we continue under the influence of some leading partiality, so neither are we capable of doing it to ourselves while we remain fettered by any obstinate prejudice. And as a man who is attached to a prostitute is unfitted to choose or judge of a wife, so any proposition in favor of a rotten constitution of government will disable us from discerning a good one. That was the first chapter of Thomas Paine's Common Sense. So I hear everybody screaming, you know, make America great again. The thing is, most people don't even know what made America great in the first place, or who the people were that helped make America great. But the core of what made America great was the people, and the founding fathers knew this. And that's why they came out with the very first lines of the Constitution that says, "We the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare, and secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, to ordain and establish this Constitution for the United States of America." So that's why I've done this podcast. I'm doing this podcast to help educate anybody that wants to listen to what made America great. I want to talk about the First Amendment, the Second Amendment. I'm going to talk about Thomas Paine, Thomas Jefferson, anything possible to help educate people, because I know that they don't really cover it in schools. They teach a lot of European history, but honestly, we're Americans and we need to have American history taught to us. How can we ask people to have national pride when we're not taught national history? I want people to understand something. If Rosa Parks, Susan B. Anthony did any of the stuff that they did in another country, say even Palestine, they would have been executed. But instead, through their sacrifices, they made changes in America. America has been molded and formed by the sacrifices of so many. That's what made America great again. The willingness to sacrifice for the greater good of the common people. I'm always asked, what nationality am I? And I tell them American. And they said, no, you know, where are you from? I said, America. My heritage is Poland and Ireland, but I'm an American. I was American born, American bred, and when I'm dying, I'm American dead. And I feel that's one of the problems, is we disassociate ourselves from being Americans. We're so used to saying, you know, I'm Italian, I'm Polish. But in all actuality, our ancestors lived in those countries. We're born in America. We live in America. And that's why I think we need to have more of an American pride. So I actually saw something that was kind of disturbing. I'm watching television, and they were talking about how KFC and McDonald's were giving money to Israel and supplies to Israel. And then these protesters were kicking the doors of KFC, trying to break in and hurt the people inside. The innocent workers who make minimum wage that did nothing. But they're American citizens. They're American citizens. Other American citizens did nothing to stop this. They just stood there and watched. The thing is, if that was my daughter or my granddaughter, yeah, I'm sorry, but I'd probably be in handcuffs. I can't stand by and let that happen. See, the thing is, this is America. We're Americans. And to watch them deface these monuments, like hurt American citizens, at the end of the day, like many Americans, you left that country that you were in to seek a better way of life. And you came here to get it. But you don't want to learn American culture. You don't want to learn American history. And you want to denounce America and say that we're the worst country in the world. Well, you need to leave. I mean, plain and simple, because my family came here to better themselves and to make a better life for themselves. And that's what we're doing. And if that's not what you're seeking, and if you're seeking to harm people, then you need to go. And if you are American and you're denouncing America, well, then you need to go too and see what life is like on the other side. Because let me tell you, it's not fluffy. For future topics on this podcast, I'm going to talk about Pax Americana, the Second Amendment. I'm going to have guests on. I encourage anybody that's out there that wants to be on this podcast to please, you know, teachers, professors, anybody that wants to talk about anything can come on this podcast. I would love to hear from you. I'm sure any audience member would love to hear from you. Just reach out and get in touch with me, American Ben, and wake up America. And like, again, I'm not talking about like getting out of bed and rubbing the sleep out your eyes. I'm talking about educating yourself on the rights that you have and the people that got you those rights. So tune in next week for the next edition of American Annals.